This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Glad to be here. Can you believe we got picked up for a second season?
It's like those back end ones where they give, like, you have to get through the first 15 and then they backboard to the other 15. So there's still a chance by the All-Star game we'll be gone.
But I can't believe we made it one full season. This is...
Well, we just celebrated our 50th episode recently. You know, the one before we did the international episode, where I'm still trying to figure out where some of these countries are, because now I'm watching them on Eurobasket this, you know, past week or so, and I still don't know where these countries are, even though there's some really fascinating stuff. Did you see that Canada lost to Venezuela in the semis of the FIBA Americas?
Oh, that was just...
What a bummer. Because the rule of thumb with the FIBA Americas is that unless you won the FIBA World Cup, which the United States did in the Olympics, or if you're the host nation, you had to finish first or second in FIBA Americas to qualify.
Yeah, but now they've added more teams, so now they have, like, extra tournaments. Mm-hmm. They did it for the 2012 Olympics, and this way, okay, because I think Russia and... It was a Turkey. Like, one big country started bitching. It's like, okay, we'll have an extra seed or two playoff. And
I don't know if that's going to happen for Canada, though.
They will be part of the tournament. I don't know whether they'll be, because there's the amount of slots given. There's like two or three free spots left that they have to go to an extra tournament.
Yeah, but Venice, I mean, I don't even know if Graves Vasquez, like, appeared for this one. I didn't really follow that closely.
No, nobody practiced for this. This is sort of like the karma thing is...
It's just Venezuela making it as a shock. Now, if Vasquez plays, maybe it'll be fun, you know?
Well, he'll be there for the Olympics. Why wouldn't he?
Look at Georgia with Zaza Pachulia, you know? They gave a couple of teams in Eurobasket some trouble, you know, this past week, you know? And look at Argentina. Argentina doesn't have that many good players, but they still got Scola.
Well, that's it. He just dominated. All it takes is one good player, and most countries don't have their A-level talent. Mm-hmm. They're just playing, which is, you know, the problem that I had with Brazil is, like, okay, we all knew they tanked it because they're hosting, so what do they care?
Yeah.
But why wouldn't you put out, like, your under-19 team just to get experience?
Well, they had that one guy, I really cannot remember his name, but he was the star player that they had for the Pan Am Games when they won the gold in Toronto. I don't even think he played on this team.
But wouldn't you want the development of your country? Let's put, like, all younger people in who might be, you know, like... U.S. be like, let's put in AAU guys, let's put in some college guys.
Well, that's what they
did. Just to get experience. Not put 30-year-old veterans who are in their last leg playing in the Brazilian league.
Yeah, that's what U.S. does with that's what they did with Pan Am. Like, they had a couple of, like, journeymen, former NBA players that have kind of went overseas over the years, like Anthony Randolph and Bobby Brown. But then the other guys are guys that are still in college, like Melo Trimble at Maryland and Ron Baker at Wichita State, and a guy I really like, Torian Prince in Baylor. So
yeah, but they're not getting, like, the A-level talent. They're just getting guys who might develop, diamonds in the rough.
Yes.
But it's just, like, it makes no sense that, you know, Brazil wouldn't do that just to, you know, build their team down the line.
Yeah, it was some fun stuff there with FIBA America's Afro Basket, which was won by Nigeria, who earned that spot. And then, obviously, we talk about Eurobasket. Eurobasket's fun. You know, they have some of the games on NBA TV. You could probably watch them live on ESPN3 sometimes. Really fun stuff. I think Spain's already dropped a couple of games with Pau Gasol there. So tune into that. I don't think it's completely finished yet, but it's going to be some fun stuff. But, you know, they were talking about something that's going on as the offseason is still kind of sitting there. But that's going to be changing really soon as we get into the preseason in the month of October, and then we're going to get ready the NBA season. Can you believe it's almost here?
I couldn't believe it's already September until you told me, because just time is just going by so fast.
It's just it goes a little quicker, I guess, as you waste the time, you know. And I think we've gotten a little better at wasting time when it comes to NBA, because there always is something going on. We'll probably try to keep track of a few news and notes there as we talk about some of the teams that we're going to be previewing. And the ones that we're previewing here are the grouping that we would say are in the very bottom of the barrel. Some people would say, to be honest with you, like, that's why we have there's all these podcasts out there where comedians like talk, like they absolutely shred like the worst movies. Like, sometimes talking about the worst teams is actually funner than talking about the best ones, because it's harder to poke holes at the best teams, but it's really easy to rip the hearts out of some of these teams that don't really have much going on, and these are the worst ones.
Well, that's half the you know, the story. It's just these teams are bad, but they have, like, you know, one or two guys like, oh man, he's going to be good. He has potential. We can literally copy and paste last year's San Antonio Spurs and just put in a LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, voiceover every few minutes or so. Mm-hmm. That's the exact same thing. Same thing for, you know, Cleveland and Golden State. But these teams, they're changing, they're trying new things. Well, most of them, half the roster wasn't there last year, and half the roster won't be there next year. It's always something going on. They're always doing something.
Some of these teams are building up. Some of them are still kind of in that holding pattern because they don't really know what they want yet. But Adam and I kind of did this based on a percentage chance, you know, for some of these teams that we grouped together. And Adam and I have both come to the agreement for the five that we're going to mention at the bottom that these teams have probably a 0% chance of making the playoffs. Would you concur?
It's not looking good for any of them.
Like, I could see one inching up there, maybe like at like 5%, maybe threatening for like maybe a month in the regular season.
Well, there's always a cutoff. Somebody has to fall down. It's like, well, who are they better than? Are they better than this team next year? Up? Well, no, not really. Mm-hmm. But again, this is way too early to predict. Teams can make major trades.
Or is it? I don't think it's that early to predict in the NBA. It's the NBA is the most predictable league in pro sports.
Yeah, but no one would have predicted a freak Kevin Durant injury would have derailed Oklahoma City last year.
Or the Phoenix Suns almost making the playoffs.
Yeah, Phoenix and then imploding, and there's always one or two oddballs.
Yeah, obviously, you know, unless there's injuries that kind of creep in into the training camp, which we're, you know, obviously not at yet, but we're going to talk about what we have on hand, and, you know, for our titled group here, No Chance in Hell. Do your best Vince impersonation with that.
No, thank you. I'll leave that.
Your voice will be gone for 2 weeks again.
Huh? I'll leave that to Crisculo and Rosero. There.
But no, the first one we're going to be talking about, and actually it's two from the same division, actually the beloved division that Adam has to sift through, even though there's all this talk about, well, because they're only taking in conference playoff seedings based on conference record, divisions don't matter anymore, which I don't really think is true, because every team in the conference, with the exception of maybe two or three, you play four times a year, and no matter what the record is and what the playoff seeding is, if you're a division rival, there is that little extra something there, even for the really bad teams. So I'm not completely in agreement with that. I think that, you know, going by division, you still have that sort of closer kinship with those teams. So for the two that we're about to talk about in the Atlantic, do you kind of feel that same way, even though the conference alignment thing has changed with the playoff seeds?
Well, it's just like, why even bother having divisions anymore if you're just gonna, you know, if you're just gonna have that
pride.
You can put another banner. Oh, we were the division Atlantic champions. Okay, but you know, most times it's not going to be. I don't think you're going to see a division champion not make the playoffs.
Not the champion, but I can see only one getting in.
Yeah, but that's all you need is just one. You just need the chip, but I just don't see it. It's like, oh, you know, they're doing just seeds, and the champion's not going to make it. Like, how? There's always going to be one team that's better than the rest.
Yeah, but I've seen some situations where the division sort of starts to perk up because the top team is so good that the other teams behind them are trying to sort of keep up.
or like baseball in the old AL West, where every yeah. team was like two games behind.
Yeah, and,
like,
and then all of a sudden the wild card is flooded with the same teams from the same divisions.
Yeah,
pretty much. But this one we're talking about the New York Knickerbockers. Oh my gosh, last season 17-65. Carmelo Anthony had a couple of like bright spots individually in terms of like gameplay, but they shut him down after the All-Star break where they had the All-Star game in the Garden. He played the game, and I don't think he played another game again after that. Pretty awful. You know, the whole roster was really nameless. Phil Jackson taking over didn't really do that much good for him. And then the draft, they come in, the lottery, they get the fourth pick. Everyone was disappointed. Then they took Kristaps Porzingis out of Latvia. People were even more disappointed because they didn't, you know, New Yorkers are so, like, impatient. They don't know if Porzingis is going to be able to, you know, come in that quickly and make an impact. Do you see – how many minutes you see here for Porzingis?
Unfortunately, I see a good deal of minutes after a while, because they brought in a lot of new names. You usher out Cole Aldrich, Jason Smith, and Bargnani. Mm-hmm. And then you bring in Lopez. Okay, he's going to get all your minutes for your center. Porzingis is more, he's a four, so a stretch four. Who are you going to put in there? Is Kevin Serafin, Derek Williams is going to start for your team?
I could see them playing small and putting Clay Anthony early in that spot.
Clay Anthony already couldn't even get on the floor with last year's team with nobody on it.
Mm-hmm.
He has been a moderate disappointment thus far.
Well, he was a second rounder, so I don't know what they really expected out of him.
Well, A, the New York fans are irrational. Mm-hmm. B, he sort of fell to the second round because everybody had him really mid-first.
Yeah. Like you were alluded to, here's who's out of the mix. Tim Hardaway Jr., Andrea Bargnani, Shane Larkin. Weirdly, Bargnani and Larkin both went to the Nets. Jason Smith, Quincy Acey, Cole Aldrich, and then Alexei Shved went overseas and to play at Khimki in Russia. We had talked about that team in the previous episode about the internationals. Their additions are Aaron Aflalo, the off guard, Robin Lopez, a lot of big guys here. Derek Williams out of from Sacramento. We talked about how they drafted Porzingis. Kyle O'Quinn, they signed away from Orlando. Kevin Serafin from Washington. They also drafted a guy I like, Jerian Grant from Notre Dame. So I think we might see a little more Grant than we see a Porzingis, because I think their point guard spot with Jose Calderon and Langston Galloway, there's just no sure things there. I mean, and I don't even know. I know that Calderon has decent, like, efficiency numbers shooting-wise and assist-to-turnover-ratio-wise, but I can see a situation where Grant sort of wins over the MSG crowd and he starts getting more of the starters' minutes.
Well, that shouldn't take a lot, because everybody already hates Calderon. But right now, he is the starter. He is the best point guard on the team. And, you know, it's just like this team is a year away now. Like, those names you listed,
they're a year away from a big signing, is what I would say.
Is an awesome bench. Mm-hmm. They got their bench all set now with these long-term signings. All you need to do is get a big player or two, and then they're golden.
So you think that they succeeded in a way with the free agency because they're building a team that even though they're starting in this campaign, which is probably going to fail, they can use them as backups in the future when they start buying other players in the summer.
Well, you know, Derek Williams he's been a disappointment as number two pick, but he's a solid energy bench guy. Aflalo disappointed not one but two teams last year. And, you know, nobody really wanted him. Kevin Serafin wasn't able to, you know, he couldn't crack the roster.
I think Serafin's a good defensive big man. I don't think he's totally
but he's young. So that's the problem, is he didn't really find his minutes and he still doesn't
He was a slow developing player for sure.
Yeah, Kyle O'Quinn was a solid signing.
Yeah, he's but they just gave up a second round pick just to get him, which I still don't understand. Like, why didn't they just wait? I know he was a restricted free agent, but why didn't you just wait for him to be available at a later, you know, at a later date? I didn't understand.
Well, as far as backup big men go, he's not terrible, and considering, you know, you got,
you know, well, they had Amundsen and Jason Smith as their front court. They needed girth. You know, they need big boys.
Amundsen is your front court starter.
And that's what O'Quinn is. O'Quinn's a big boy. You know,
yeah, he is a big boy. He'll give you solid.
And
give
Lopez
you
is a,
solid
has strong. He's got strong legs, and he's got good shot blocking ability. So their front court is definitely improved, and they definitely needed it. They were second to last in rebounding. Their offensive rebounding was bad. You know, Derek Fisher had to learn a lot, and he had to eat a lot of crap last year. What kind of identity is he going to be able to imprint on this team? Because he really couldn't find one last year.
Well, he can either A, adapt his triangle, which so far all the players have said we don't like it.
It looks more like a pentagon.
You know, nobody understands it. He's, you know, he'd either go the way of the Kurt Rambis and win another 20 games and get booed out of the crowd, and or just be like, look, this isn't working. Our talent isn't really fit for it. But, you know, Phil learned the hard way that people aren't going to sign just because it's him. And, you know, he had that ego check last year because, you know, you're reading the stories like, oh, he's like, well, why wouldn't people want to come to New York? New York's huge. But when you have people going to Milwaukee and Oklahoma City signing $70 million deals, times have changed.
You're talking about them getting shunned by, you know, Greg Monroe and people like Marco Bellinelli not going there, right?
When Robin Lopez, Aaron Aflalo, and Derek Williams are your three key signings, that doesn't look good if you're swinging for the Aldridges.
Aflalo has the player option after next year. So
yeah, they all have one-year deals. They're betting on themselves. They're hoping, you know, I'm going to do good, therefore I'm going to opt out of my deal and I could get something way better, because that's just my stock is at an all-time low.
Who does Carmelo have to blame? Is it himself for taking the Supermax?
No.
Do you think he has a legitimate gripe, you know, and because of all the rumors about him wanting out and trying to ask for a trade later, and I get sick of it, but it's
I'm already sick of it, and B, you know, it's not his fault. A, I wouldn't blame you if you're like, oh, I'm going to take the money. Why wouldn't you? Get every penny that you can. You have no obligation to give any of it back. Number one. Number two, he didn't say go tank this year and get, you know, the shittiest possible record you possibly can and be an embarrassment of New York sports.
No, but he didn't help by saying, okay, I'll take it easy from February to April.
Oh, well, he was told to shut it down.
Exactly.
It wasn't him. It wasn't
him. I mean, imagine, it was like, that's, yo, what I might Michael, win us a that's what I went Michael Jordan in 86, and you know what Michael told him? He said, fuck no, I'm coming back to play. And they got him in the playoffs, and that was the playoff season where he had the 63 points in Boston on a shitty Bulls team. You know, maybe it's just because teams aren't built that way anymore, or players.
Well, that's the thing. That's a different time and a different era.
Yeah, exactly.
This is more of the Kevin Garnett and the Timberwolves. Like, okay, you can play and put more mileage on your legs, but we still ain't going to get anywhere close to playoffs. So you're just wasting a year on a bad team.
So we're talking about a different day, different era, even though it's the same division. Do you remember the last time the Philadelphia 76ers were like a legitimately good team that you were looking forward to watching?
Oh, no. Let's just stay on the. I don't want to talk about Philly.
I mean, which Philly did you like? The Iverson teams, or did you really like the Dr. J teams, or the Barkley teams even?
I like the Barkley teams. You can't not like Charles Barkley for someone who's completely undersized and just looks like he has no athletic ability whatsoever.
Even though he was totally brash and his second best player was, you know, Johnny Dawkins and Hersey Hawkins.
Yeah, those teams were, you know, overachieving teams. They're nice to love. Iverson teams.
I didn't care for the Larry Brown Iverson teams. I really didn't.
They just the team they put around him with, like, you know, Larry Hughes and
yeah, they had Stackhouse. They had the replay of one of the Dikembe Mutombo, you know, games, because Mutombo, you know, and God bless him, he went into the Hall of Fame enshrinement just this past week, and then they had the game 7 where the Sixers played the Bucks, and boy, it was I remember thinking, man, this game was a lot better when I watched it then, because this game sucks now. You know, maybe.
Well, because, yeah, you're too busy living in the moment to be like, let's reflect and see what happened to all these players.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is year 4 of the rebuild. If this were college, all your freshmen you brought in are now seniors, and you would have been fired long ago because your program's a mess.
Okay. Sam Hinkie has built something that is almost impossible to build upon because he's torn it down so many times. He blew it up in, you know, right before the 2013 draft, where he traded away Drew Holiday, and then they drafted Nerlens Noel, who wasn't going to be able to play. 2014, they draft Joel Embiid and Dario Saric, both of whom weren't ready. Embiid because of injury, Saric because he's overseas. Then in 2015, this past draft, they announced that Embiid is likely to miss the entire season again, which is still the word. And then they draft Jahlil Okafor, the center out of Duke. Now, I say that from the top with the Philadelphia 76ers because I think there's a pretty good chance that Jahlil Okafor is going to be their best player. Would you agree?
By default, he's the only offensive player they have on that team.
Now, there's the assumption out there that they got the steal on that trade that they made with Sacramento when the Kings were dumping salary to try to make some free agent moves. So they got guys like Nick Stauskas, Carl Landry, and then they eventually traded Jason Thompson so they could pick up Gerald Wallace's, you know, cancer contract, you know, which is at the end of its deal. You know, so basically, they got a lottery-level guy in Stauskas, and then they brought in Carl Landry, who's a veteran. I mean, what can they really provide?
Well, okay, pop quiz. I don't want to answer your question with a question, but pop quiz. Who are the two highest-salaried players on Philly?
I would say Carl Landry and Jeremy Grant.
Jeremy Grant?
I don't know. All these guys are second-round players. I think Roden may have been a first-rounder.
Their highest contracts are Gerald Wallace and JaVale McGee, who they just said, we'll cut you and eat your entire salary.
Oh, they gave him the stretch provision.
Two guys. I don't think they gave the stretch provision. I think they just said, we'll eat it for 2 years.
Well, they have. That's the thing. They have the cap room to do it.
Yeah.
So when they say you're not spending money, they're saying, no, we are. We were spending money on Gerald Wallace and JaVale McGee.
Your two highest salary players aren't going to play 1 minute, and Carl Landry's third. Embiid is fourth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just embarrassing. Okay, you have lottery picks. So you're saying you're not another 3 years away. Remember every once in a while there's a team that does this, and let's just take a flashback to Chicago, who had the second pick and the fourth pick, or the first and the third, or whatever.
It was the second and the – I think it was the second and the fourth.
Second and third?
I think it was the second and the fourth.
Yeah, so how did Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler play out for them? We're on the seventh Chicago championship now with those two spearheading it?
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't work. And you say Dario Saric's coming in next year, who's a stretch four. And all they have are fours. And you could say, all right, this is Okafor's team. He can go destroy everybody.
That's a scary thing to say, that this is Okafor's team. Because there were times at Duke where I didn't even think it was his team.
Well, it's by default. You can score as many points as you want. We'll write up every play for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but even how good, you know, look back at number one picks who are rookies of the year. I don't even think LeBron made the playoffs his rookie year.
No, he did not. He didn't even make the All-Star team, even though a lot of people thought he should have.
That was just sort of a, we're not going to give it to an 18-year-old.
We're not going to give it to a rookie, or straight out of high school player.
That was pretty much just, that was the, you know, you're going to play on. But if they're not going to make the playoffs with the best player, if Okafor turns into, you know, Kevin Garnett 2.0 immediately and starts 20-10 every night and the next Anthony Davis, whatever, it's still not going to do anything for them.
Yeah.
And you're still 2 years away. And then you're going to start paying these guys. And even with new salary, you can't max out all these players and then you're going to run out of room just like they are now because of that.
I don't get an Anthony Davis vibe out of Jahlil Okafor where he could be
really
good, really good as rookie, like, I don't think he's going to be, like, really good his rookie year, and then his second year is going to blossom, and then his third year is going to be even better. I just don't see it with I think Okafor will peak at, like, kind of like the level of Kevin Love. Like, maybe, like, a step below.
A stats guy in a bad team?
Yeah, like, a step below. Like, I think he'll be, like, a good... Like, nah, I don't mean Kevin Love in terms of style of play. They're very different. Jahlil Okafor is a true postman, and they needed that, because Nerlens Noel, that, from what I've noticed, you know, as he's played his first, you know, his first full year in the NBA, he's more of a roamer than he is a big man. He's got the size of a big man, but he's kind of more of a, he's kind of more of a, like a defensive stalwart type, a stopper. You know, I mean, offensively, he's definitely got a ways to go. Whereas,
oh, he's not. I don't see any offensive game developing for him.
Yeah.
There's no way all of a sudden you're going to start.
He's got some skills, though. I mean, he was one of the top. He was tops for the rookies in steals and blocks. So, you know, he's got the agility. Okafor,
yeah, so he's just going to be the big man defensive guy.
Okafor lacks the agility, but he's got the footwork. You know, and he can score with that, you know, on both with both hands. And, you know, you can't let him get to his right, because if he does, you're in trouble. You know, so he's got some really good talent as a big. That's one addition, okay? We talked about Stauskas and Karl Landry. They signed a multi-year deal with Kendall Marshall, who had last played in Milwaukee. And then Gerald Wallace, Pierre Jackson, J.P. Tokoto, who they drafted, and then Rashawn Holmes and Scotty Wilbekin. The people out of the mix are Henry Sims, Thomas Robinson, Luke Mbamute, Jason Richardson. I didn't even know he was on the team. Glenn Robinson III and Ish Smith. It's not like those guys are going to be missed, but it's not like they replaced him with anything substantial.
Well, that's, you know, now Tokoto, he took the same deal last year as
J.J. McDaniels.
Yes. Yeah, so now you're having players saying, I don't even want to go there.
Mm-hmm. I'd rather take my chances and let my contract go out, or take a team option if you want to trade me.
That's just, you see it once. It's like, okay, that is strange. But to see two players in 2 years going, I want no part of that team. I know I'm going to get minutes here, so my value should be good. Or even if I don't, I have a year experience. I can make have a better chance of making a free agent roster next year. That's just amazing how people are just trying to avoid this. You're not going to, you know, the only way they could do it is if they hit the next LeBron in the lottery. Mm-hmm. Then you'll have to get a free agent signing, because people just don't want to come there. All their players they've picked have just been garbage trades. Kendall Marshall, who's coming off, what is it, ACL injury?
Yes.
Has no athleticism, doesn't play defense,
only a passer, nothing else.
And they're like, well, what value does that do? You have, you know, Furkan Oldemir, another four. Yeah,
Hollis Thompson, who's kind of a taller three. And then I like Jeremy Grant a little bit. And Isaiah Cannon's a good shooter who played in the D League for the Rockets for a little while. So we'll see there. After that, I mean,
the biggest disappointment for me last year was Jakar Sampson.
I thought he was actually a surprise, like a good surprise for them, like at the end of the season.
Well, because he was, you know, undrafted out of St. John's. And I'm like, okay, this guy, you know, maybe it was a mistake. He shouldn't have gone drafted. Maybe somebody should have taken him. And then you just... I didn't know why, like, he didn't do anything. He didn't distinguish himself from the other garbage on that team.
Yeah. I mean, I think with the St. John's players, we'll see a little bit more. You know, Sir Dominic Poynter is another guy that, you know, had played with him. I'm just trying to basically say a long-winded way of, like, saying I don't think this guy's going to be much. But this might be a rhetorical question. I know they tried to play fast. They're seventh in pace. But, you know, their points per game is awful. Even though they take a lot of attempts, their three-point percentage was second to last. You know, by playing fast, their steals per game and their blocks per game were inflated. They were fourth in blocks and second in steals. Noel had a lot to do with that. Rebounding, they were pretty bad. Their free throw percentage was awful, and getting Okafor is not going to make it any better. They turned the ball over like crazy. What do they have to do to get better? Like, what do you think they can realistically do to get better based on the stats that they assembled last season?
Nothing. I don't, you know, it's, everybody's giving Brett Brown like amazing praise, like how good he's doing with a horrible team, but is he developing any of these other garbage? Wasn't the point to find the next diamond in the rough to go with these starters?
I thought Michael Carter-Williams was starting to find his way a little bit, but he had some injuries. And
he just had, like I was saying before, with Okafor having carte blanche, that has to do with Carter-Williams. He's like, I don't care. Run whatever you want. Shoot as many shots as you want. I'm a three-point shooter. I could do that. Okay, go ahead. Have fun, Michael. Oh, you brick five? We don't care. We're not. We're just here because we were contractually.
Yeah, there's no streamlining. Like, hey, how about you not do this? Let's try this and may try to get you to be better. You know.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna finally get away from the Atlantic
Thank
division.
You.
It was tough for you. I know you didn't. I know you don't like talking.
How many
about
times
Philly.
We talk about how bad Philly is, and they're even worse than last year.
Well, they're so bad that they've almost become a hot topic because of the tanking, which makes a lot of former players and some, you know, analysts just sick to their stomach watching this team just dole out one shitty team after the other.
And that's just great. Like, how bad is it? You have literally other owners are like, this is bad for business.
And then there's the Sixers history. So, you know, it's kind of like the idea of, well, you're taking this team that had great history and you're shitting on it, you know? Now, a lot of teams, you can say that about a lot of teams. Almost every team in the NBA has great history with the exception of maybe a couple, but, you know, all of them, you know, they have just enough respect as a franchise that if you tank it, then you're going to have a pretty angry fan base. If you do it long enough, then by the time the results start to yield, I think this happened in Minnesota with David Kahn. Once things actually started to turn around in Minnesota, people were so, like, desensitized by the shitty years that no one even cared anymore.
Oh, that's pretty much it. It's just, you're playing the empty seats and
yeah.
You make one good deal, but you're still lambasted for the four bad ones you make. And, you know, people, I think we're at the point now, people in the NBA are sort of expecting a NFL one-year, like, turnaround. Like, oh, we missed the playoffs last year. Okay, let's go sign a few people and we'll be good again. It doesn't really work that way, as we've seen with all these teams who are still trying to rebuild after all these years.
And drafting's a big part of it. And if you're not drafting well and they – I don't want to say they didn't draft well yet because we're not sure about Embiid, and Dario Saric hasn't even come over yet, even though he shined a little bit in Eurobasket. But I mean, we got to see. You got to show me the baby. You know, I don't care about the labor. Show me the baby. Is the old
here's an interesting question for you. Are prospects now worse than they were before? Like, you could say you have the horrible drafts of the early 2000s, but are players less NBA ready now?
I think
they were back then.
I think because the college game has had such a schism from the pro game over the past, like, you know, 10 years since the one and done started, because the games are just so different now, you know, college with the physicality and the bad officiating and the coaches being so stringent, and then the NBA kind of freeing things up a little bit. Because of that schism there, I think it's harder to polish those players into the NBA game. That's why I think it's harder to implement them into the NBA game. So I think you do have a point. I think it is harder these days for prospects to get into the NBA, to fit into the NBA system than they did in college, where if you played a few years and you played a little up and down at some big school, then you were you would be more ready to play in the NBA than you are now. So I think you do have a little bit of a point there, except for the one-and-done guys. I think some of the one-and-done guys, because of the athleticism, some of them fit right in pretty quickly.
Well, that's just a lot, but the problem is there's just way too many
as we've
learned.
I don't think this team's tanking, but they're slowly getting better, but they seem to take a little bit of a step back after the firing of Jacques Vaughn, and that was the Orlando Magic. They have a new head coach in Scott Skiles, real veteran head coach. He's been around the block with teams like Milwaukee, Chicago, and Phoenix, and this is his new stop. It's actually a place he had known very well. He had the game where he had 30 assists back in 1990, which I still think is an NBA record, single game record to this day. The Magic were 25-57 last year, but they do have a little bit of name talent there. Which one do you like the most among the roster that you see there?
Well, first, the thing with Orlando is, sadly, this is what Philly wants to be. They wish they had this situation of, okay, we have talent now, but...
Yeah, but the Magic did it right because they held on to the one asset that they knew they could make out of that Dwight Howard trade, and that was Nikola Vucevic.
Yeah, but this is, like, the sad thing is, this is what Philly is striving for. This team is equally as bad since we're still, you know, third year, fourth year, where they're in the garbage the garbage in the conference, you know, the bottom of the barrel.
If you look at the team stats, I want to like – Orlando's a team I want to like. You know, like Victor Oladipo I think is a future superstar. Now, let's get that out of the way. Would you agree that Oladipo is a future superstar, or do you think he's just a nice player?
He's just a nice player. He's
– I just like him a lot. Like, I think he can
really – He's good. The problem is he's a pure two, and the two is sort of becoming marginalized.
And they're trying to make him a point guard, which
I think we learned the problem with this team was the coach and the lack of development. And, you know, yes, they took a step back because they had no direction. And with Skiles coming in, okay, they have something to go for. But this is just a random group of people, of young kids. This is like Mighty Ducks 2.
Very young.
Where it's just we bust in some kids from, you know, here's the kid from Texas. Here's Keenan. Out of nowhere, here's the girl. They got random people in. They just don't know how to play together. And you just have random, we have Aaron Gordon. Well, what does he do? Mm-hmm. He does nothing yet. Well, he's super athletic, but what does he do? Okay, now you're at the point where we had Utah last year. You're now having to give out money. Tobias Harris, you gave him a max deal.
Yeah, Oladipo, you gave him the big bucks just like Vucevic.
You're going to have to give him the big bucks next year. Mm-hmm. You got Harkless and for some reason just hated him, and it's just like obviously Ben Gordon I thought was more you got him last year, you hired him as sort of a coach of these players, but no, you try to have him play. And
if they buy in after this year and Oladipo, Harris, and Vucevic are three of your kind of like your salary cap holds, your big holds, do you think they'll be able to build, that Scott Skiles will be able to build off of that a decent Eastern Conference team that might even make the playoffs?
In a couple years? Mm-hmm. This is a team that has a vision, is a couple years away. The one thing they are lacking right now, I don't see any three-point shooters on that team. Oladipo can't.
Best three-point shooter is Channing Frye.
Yeah, your best three-point shooter is
I mean, Elfrid Payton
can't shoot for anything. Yeah. Oladipo's a slasher. Evan Fournier, I don't know what he could do. You are higher on him than I am.
Well, he was there with LaVerne, you know, and the two Frenchies out in Denver. So I always would mix them up. Like, okay, which one is that one? Because I never really watched him that much in Denver. And so when he went to Orlando, I was like, okay, let's see what he can do now that he's in a new dig. I didn't really see much out of him. Like, I think he's got a little bit of offensive talent. Now, you like the draft pick, Mario Azonja.
Mario Azonja, he, you know, there hasn't been a really player like him yet. And that's why scouts and, you know, analysts are sort of hard.
He's very Ginobili-like. Now, I hate to do the Euro to Euro, but...
He's Ginobili-like, but he's 6'8". Mm-hmm. Okay, that doesn't translate. Yeah. Okay, well, he's sort of like, is he like Dirk? Well, no, because he's 6'8", not 7 foot. And he's a four. Aaron Gordon, are you a four? Tobias Harris, are you a four?
I think what's going to happen is they're going to put Gordon in at the three and play oversized. And I think Oladipo as a two, even though his wingspan's not great, can bully a lot of shooting guards in the NBA. I think the development of Payton for this team is huge.
And that's why Scott Skiles is the coach of the team. Because, mm-hmm. we know who, you know, needs the help. But, okay, so your starting five is that. Who's going to score on that team?
They were 25th in points per game. They were 22nd in three-pointers made, so it's obvious that they didn't really have any intent of making threes. They never got to the free-throw line, even though they had those two big boys in Vucevic and Harris, which really surprised me.
Vucevic is kind of soft. He's not going to get in there and tangle with
them. Well, so is Harris. You know, I mean,
Harris isn't a pure, you know, he's not a pure four. Mm-hmm. He's one of the new NBA, you know, small power forwards.
The Draymond Greens.
Yeah. Yes.
He's sort of – he's almost more polished than Draymond Green in a couple of ways. You know, Draymond had to work to what he had. You know, Tobias, it kind of came naturally, if you ask me, even when he was in Milwaukee.
The thing is, he still hasn't – we don't know what he is yet. He got a max deal, and he is still just potential. Like, you see flashes, and you see just dumb moves.
Out of the mix is Kyle O'Quinn and Mo Harkless, like you mentioned. Harkless went to the Blazers, and O'Quinn, we already mentioned, went to the Knicks. Will they be missed in the front court?
Kyle O'Quinn will, because he actually provided solid minutes. And
now they got Jason Smith to plug that up.
Yeah, but Jason Smith didn't really come back. I thought he would have been, you know, a comeback player last year, because he did. He was solid in New Orleans before he got his injury. But, you know, Smith is just a body. And then Andrew Nicholson has already fallen out of favor with the roster. I don't know why, but
he's been playing for Team Canada for the last couple of months. So,
yeah, but for the past 2 years, like his rookie year, he was giving solid minutes, giving solid energy. Okay, we know he's not a star, but he's a solid, you know, number third guy off the bench. He'll give you 20 minutes. He's not going to be a liability to your team. He'll play hard.
Were you surprised they got Shabazz Napier for basically nothing?
This day and age, no.
I thought that was a steal.
Oh, well, of course it was a steal, just like how the Knicks got Jaren Grant.
I thought he looked good for Miami in Summer League. I don't know where that came from with the.
But that's Summer League. He looked horrible last year. And
he looked okay at times. Yeah.
The problem is, you could be the best player you are, but you're still going to, you know, look at Telfair. That was the problem. You look undersized. You're going to be overwhelmed with, you know, if you're putting out these big 6'4", you know, 6'5" Dante Exum like point guards now.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get eaten alive being 5'11".
So team stats wise, the only thing they were really in the like in an elite class with was steals at 12th. But after that, they really weren't good at anything. They don't block shots. You know,
they didn't do anything. They just were there, and it's just like, well, you know.
Team stats wise are worse than Philadelphia. You could almost argue.
Don't have that. Matches comes down to coaching.
Mm-hmm.
That comes down to having no vision. No, let's, you know, bad teams want to be good on defense first. That's the first thing they do is, okay, let's work
now,
on
Skiles things. Is a defensively minded guy for the most part. I know the Milwaukee teams kind of like perked up the offense when they had Brandon Jennings and Monte Ellis together. But Skiles has really prided himself on defense pretty much at every stop he's been.
But that's the thing is you have to, you pride yourself on defense, but at the same time, you have to play to what your roster is. And, you know, Monta Ellis doesn't play defense. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, Brandon Jennings, we just sort of learned, is just mediocre.
So what does he have to do with Vucevic, Harris, and Oladipo?
He needs to find a group that works. He needs to there's going to be an odd man out there somewhere. And you're going to, you know, these are high-value commodities they have. It's not just like a flea market sale like with the Celtics. We're like, okay, we have what you need. Make us an offer. And you won't get a lot. You'll get a high price for a Vucevic or, you know, Payton, or if they do try to flip Gordon or even Channing Frye and his mm-hmm. stretch five-ness.
Yeah, I can see Frye getting moved, you know, and then put
you know, Vucevic. Fournier. It's just like, well, what do you know, you have Gordon, Tobias, and you know, and his Zanja, if he starts playing well, and how fast are you going to have his development?
Go ahead.
You have a logjam. You have Vucevic. Okay, he's a center, but you need to pair him with somebody. The three people there aren't good pairs for him, I think.
I think big picture is this, and this is way down the line. I think Scott Skiles is the guy before the guy. Like, I think he's the guy that's going to build up that team to something nice, but it's going to be the guy after that that picks up the pieces that really takes off.
Yeah, I believe you're correct, because, you know, hasn't Scott Skiles had a history of sort of wearing out welcomes everywhere?
You know, Phoenix, he did it, and then Mike D'Antoni mm-hmm. took over and yep. went that.
And move. That's what, yeah, it was like,
Chicago.
It's funny, everyone wants to bash Ty Willingham for college football.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at his recruiting class, he brought in the next player, that was great. Then everybody who took over after him couldn't recruit for shit afterwards. And
yeah.
That's the same thing. It's like, he'll get you there, but he'll already have been so abrasive to his team, you got nothing left.
Yeah, there's certain people where they'll get you to a certain point, but if you that was the Mark Jackson argument, you know, that they've had over and over again about, you know, whether it was the right move to move him or fire him, and that's that. It seemed like Mark was a guy that could get him to a certain point, but if you wanted to take that extra step, if you really wanted to hit elite status, you had to make a move. Obviously, Orlando's not even close to that area yet. That's why they're here. And also, thoughts with Devin Marble and his family. Is his father, the great Roy Marble from Iowa, passed away from cancer. So, obviously, thoughts with him. He's in the mix there in Orlando. I don't think he's going to get cut. The only other mention that we had that we didn't even talk about was C.J. Watson, who's kind of a dependable point guard there. He'll be a sort of a backup there for Peyton.
Was a steal for Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been a great sign because he was the one who sort of filled the void. Really, we had mentioned how, Indiana sort of overachieved with these two cheap players. They get him, and then all of a sudden you have Shabazz. And it's just like, well, now what do you do? Shabazz is only a point guard. You can try to move CJ to the two, but
yeah,
they don't, that's the thing is, and who's...
They have a lot of smalls and then a lot of talls,
But I have a lot of smalls to talk, but I don't see a backup for Oladipo. Unless you were going to try to have Fournier at the two?
If Fournier was at the two, I think that can work. Maybe Hazanja as a six man.
But that's the thing. It's just they have a lot of just, roster oddities.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, it just comes down to inexperience. We like, we like these young people, but the problem is they're just way too young. And, there's nothing you could do if you're dead last in free throws.
But they're not trying to get worse. You could tell that they're trying. There were some games where I'd watch the Magic. I'm like, man, they're giving all they got.
They're giving all they got, but the problem is what they got isn't that good.
We're going to go to the West Coast now and shoot over there to Cali, and we'll talk about the Lakers. But before we talk about the Lakers, I want to talk about the epic podcast. I'll call it Beef Down because it seemed like they were trying to downplay the beef that's still there between Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant. Were you fascinated by the interview that they had?
No, because what year is it again?
It's 2015.
And what year did this beef go down? 10 years ago?
It's been going. It went down for a while. It went down from 97 all the way to 2004 and on.
The media is like, it's the same. Like, oh man, David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar. But it's like, well, they're all touring together now because they all need money. It's like at some point you just have to be like, okay, enough's enough. Like, okay, yeah, guess what? We were both, young kids were just both alphas and
two alpha males, like they said. Yeah,
We just had big egos. Okay, now we're in our late 30s at the end of careers, we could see things, and now we see young kids doing the same stupid shit. It's like, man, we sort of blew it. Yeah, we kind of did.
Well, did you get anything out of the interview that you did not know, maybe that kind of surprised you out of it?
No, I got nothing.
I got one thing out of it, that Shaq said he didn't want to leave L.A. That surprised me because it seemed to me like he was trying very hard to get out of there after the Pistons finals was over.
He didn't want to leave L.A., but he didn't, he didn't want to stay where he was. It was definitely
this town isn't big enough for the two of us.
And part of his ego might have said, I don't want to go, so they're going to get rid of him.
Who were you? And it's like with wrestling with Brett and Sean. Are you a Brett guy or are you a Sean guy? And I kind of like them both. Were you a Shaq guy or a Kobe guy?
Well, based on history, Kobe has made zero friends ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hard to give, the benefit to Kobe. As there's nothing saying he's arguably one of the two best players in NBA history. Top three.
Who's that, Shaq or Kobe?
Kobe.
I think Kobe's the second greatest shooting guard in NBA history behind Michael.
It's Kobe,
10.
Jordan, and then if you want to put Larry Bird in the conversation.
I think Shaq, I think Hakeem was better than Shaq, but I think Shaq's more dominant than
Shaq. Shaq was more dominant. It doesn't matter how much.
The better question is who you would prefer, Shaq or Duncan, because Duncan's got forget the rings. We'll just talk about the body of work,
I would take Shaq.
Yeah. And I was thinking about this because we were talking about rivalries all the time and, how I miss them so much and how there should be more animosity. And I was trying to think about it, and I came to a realization listening to the interview that, you always look for the rivalries after the fact. Like, what was the greatest rivalry of your era? And, I was thinking about it, and I realized it wasn't the Lakers and the Kings. It wasn't the Knicks and the Heat. It wasn't the Pacers and the Pistons. The greatest rivalry of the early 00s, the aughts, if you will, was Shaq versus Kobe.
It was just the Lakers versus the Lakers.
It was the ego trip. It was built from within. Is that a legitimate statement?
it's a correct statement. And then it took, you know, that's why when LeBron did his choice to let's all play together, everyone was like, this is crazy. You people all have big, huge egos and it'll never work because everybody's going to want the ball and how are you going to do it? And
yeah,
it just came down to just egos. And
maybe that's where the rivalries are actually lying now in the NBA. It's not with it's not external. It's not team versus team or player, even player versus player. It's like it's player versus image or player versus legacy. You know, and maybe that's where the true that's where the true debates are. It's not about who's better. It's more like how many can you win, or you know, did you need help to win a championship? That's more of the funner debate now in the NBA.
Yeah, and you know, then it was just ego. It's like, oh man, he got a Verizon commercial. Okay, I'm gonna call AT&T now. Get me on these billboards.
And with Shaq and Kobe, I could definitely feel a little bit of tension there still, where Kobe would laugh off something and Shaq would, and I kind of felt like, I don't think they're telling the whole story here. But now we actually have to talk about
Well, I think
about
they're just sort of, you know, they've patched it up, you know. This is just sort
he
of.
Said he said he loved him, and he told him to tell the wife that Uncle Shaq said hi, so.
You know, that's the media thing, and don't forget, Shaq's now the, you know, just the talking head for TNT, so he automatically has that little shticky sound to him now.
Now, Shaq, the big Aristotle's at a point where he's doing his own podcast, which actually obviously means he's pretty much done with his basketball career. They already have his number hanging. And Kobe's probably not that far behind. He's fighting the twilight, too. Do you think this is it for Kobe?
It has to be. There's no... As much as the Kobe defenders want to say it, this has been the second year in a row he's had just shut down due to injuries. Mm-hmm. And his body is just falling apart around. Like, his mind is still strong. He's still getting his 22 points a game, but now it's taking 40 shots because he just keeps willing it too much.
You know, he did a ton of interviews, you know, along with the injury that gave him the time to do the publicity for that documentary he did, Muse, on Showtime, which is a really fascinating documentary, you know, looking into the mind of an incredibly competitive guy like Kobe is. You know, there's really not many like him. You know, the funny part about Kobe is that even though he was considered kind of like a new school type of guy, now you look at him and he's such an old, grizzled, you know, competitive veteran that he kind of reminds you of the old days in a way, which makes all of us feel really old because we remember when Kobe was considered like the new kid on the block. But to really speak to what I'm asking about, for Kobe, I felt like watching him in those interviews that even though he kept saying, I'm not running retire, I still want to keep going, I still have the drive. When you keep telling yourself that, I think there's a point where deep inside you kind of know that the end is coming.
Well, there's a twofold thing. Number one, this media tour, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I think somebody got in his ear and said, look, man, your legacy is coming to a close. You want to look back and be known as that asshole who ran everyone out all those years.
So you think it's damage? You think it's like long-term damage control?
Because now he could be, he was competitive. He comes from that different era. Because now people forget about it, as opposed to, because you think about it, he really was an asshole.
Oh, of course. When he did the Shaq in 04 in the Lakers where he held him up for his max contract was rotten.
Yeah, people, and you know, now it's just trying to be, you know, okay, you're older. People now sort of feel bad for you because you're not striking fear into them. And, you know, I think that's more because he never used to give really interviews before, like a couple years ago.
Yeah, he was a little closed off at times.
He was a little, you know, reclusive. And obviously.
And he's got a little bit of a swear jar, too.
You know, he has a swear jar. And obviously a lot of the reclusion came from the, you know, from Denver and waiting for that to cool down. And the second part is you could say like, oh, man, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to retire. And that's the same thing you see now at the county fairs. You're like, oh, man, King Kong Bundy and Jimmy Snuka are fighting. It's just like, well, maybe they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
We all love the Iron Sheik.
Well, Kobe says, well, I don't want the rocking chair like Kareem did on his tour. That's kind of weird. It's like, well, no, Kobe, you're not going to get the rocking chair, but you'll get a round of applause because these people are legitimately going to be thinking, this is the last time I'm going to see Kobe Bryant.
But he got
even
the rocking
if you
chair.
Don't think so, you know?
He got the rocking chair because it was, because he had a, you know, he already had a personality and he took it in stride and everybody was laughing.
Mamba doesn't have that person.
Kobe would be like, you know, he'd probably just pull a Bobby Knight, just throw that thing across the court and just get angry. So it's just he wouldn't enjoy that.
Okay, we got to talk about the Lakers now.
Can we just talk about Kobe and be like, Lakers too have a team, but you know, just let's lightning round.
We're going to lightning round this. Out of the mix, Ed Davis, Jordan Hill, Jeremy Lin, Carlos Boozer, Steve Nash obviously retired, Vander Blue, Wayne Ellington, and Wesley Johnson. In are going to be Roy Hibbert, who they basically got for nothing in a trade, Brandon Bass and Lou Williams they signed away. Julius Randle broke his leg immediately into his rookie year, which is a shame. And then they drafted over D'Angelo Russell, Larry Nance Jr., Anthony Brown, and then some other ones like Jonathan Holmes, Michael Frazier's second, Robert Upshaw. Nick Young is still there. Jordan Clarkson surprised as a rookie, so we'll see. I think the fascinating part of this is whether Clarkson keeps the starting spot or Russell eventually plays himself into it, or they just play him together, which is doubtful because of Kobe's spot at the shooting guard position. They lost a lot of rebounding with Davis and Hill and Boozer. They bring in Hibbert, who is a world-class underachiever. Let's be honest here. Randall and Bass are going to be there to help out Hibbert, though. What kind of a team are you seeing here? I mean, I thought they were a decent rebounding team, but now I don't know if they're going to – I don't think they balanced out those losses, you know. I thought picking up Lou Williams was good, though.
Lou Williams is a big question mark because what do you need him to shoot you into games for?
I think he maxed out in Toronto. I actually think they overplayed him in Toronto.
Oh, they did, and that was the problem. You know,
he had boosted numbers and he turned it.
He will shoot you in or out of the game, but he's not going to play defense. He's just a one-sided, one-dimensional player. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers did change. Because last year, they were just trying to get recycled garbage.
Well, I think they kind of recycled again a little bit.
Last year, it was they got, you know, Wesley Johnson, and they got Xavier Henry. They got people like that. It's like, okay, they were high picks. They can't be all bad. This year, it's like, okay, let's get Brandon Bass, solid backup. Roy Hibbert, they took a flyer on him.
Pretty much.
Lou Williams, solid backup again. Cause, you know, and one of the things I thought they sort of missed out was letting Ed Davis go.
Davis kind of had his mind already set before free agency even started. I think he kind of knew that the Lakers didn't.
But he was one of those stars who, you know, he sort of blossomed in that recycling project. The thing is. Roy Hibbert, as you know, you sort of mentioned, he has Tim Couch syndrome. He just, you know, he's lost his smile and he's just, I suck. I can't do it. Like, he needs somebody just to, you know, he needs.
If you're a Cleveland Browns fan, please don't listen to this podcast. You might get nightmares.
You know, well, Couch had talent. David Carr had talent. It was just, they just got rattled in the head and then just blew it.
Swaggy P has talent.
Swaggy P.
But he's dumb as fuck.
That's the thing is, I almost kind of want to see just Nick Young and Lou Williams in the court just to see who will take the worst shot between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a bad game of horse.
Ryan Kelly's an unrestricted free agent, so there's that.
Yeah, you're higher on him than me. Larry Nance Jr. was
He's a classic stretch four. I mean, that's kind of the way the NBA is going. So, you know, guys like him are actually, to be honest, now a dime a dozen. You know, so we'll see with him. Byron Scott kind of like to slow it down. They tried to make it out like he was never going to shoot any three-pointers or let his team shoot any threes. And that wasn't the case, even though they were 25th. But they weren't the worst. We're going to talk about the worst pretty soon. Their pace was middle of the pack. Like I told you, they were a good rebounding team, but now you lost a lot with Jordan Hill and Ed Davis, who were pretty solid rebounders, and now they're out of the mix. I just have trouble with the identity of this team. At the end of the day, I know what the identity is if he stays healthy, and this is Kobe Bryant taking a bunch of shots so that he can get up to about 20 to 25 points a game while he's on the way out.
Basically it. And it's just sort of like, well, why are they going after – why are you going after Aldridge and all these other big-name players? And even if they did add him, that team wouldn't be much better with him.
Okay. We're gonna stay in the Western Conference, but we're actually going to the Midwest, which it never made any sense to me with the conference alignments, where it's like, you know, like the ACC. Oh yeah, we're the Atlantic Coastal Conference, but here's Boston College and Notre Dame. Like, well, Notre Dame is like part of the ACC in basketball, but not football per se. You know, it never made sense to me.
That was analytics.
Yeah,
that is old school. Like, we gotta get Boston College because we get the Boston TV market, who's the fifth biggest market in the country. But they don't care about. But there's many people there, and we can sell more commercials. And
even at their best, I've always felt like the Minnesota Timberwolves were in a small pond, you know, and then they weren't really gonna climb out of it unless they really hit elite status. They came pretty close in the prime years for Kevin Garnett. Garnett is back there. But he obviously walked back into a team that is not in any position to be on a playoff scale. It also is followed by the fact that Flip Saunders is undergoing a serious condition. So he's still hospitalized from the treatment. So Sam Mitchell is going to be taking his place as the head coach now. I remember Sam Mitchell in Toronto. He was awful. But I don't expect much out of Minnesota anyway. So how much does this really hurt the team in the interim?
None. Because we should just call this team the Minnesota Beta Wolves or something. Because this is like they're doing their final beta testing, ready to go live.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they know they have no chance. So let's get three of the smartest minds we know. Let's get Andre Miller. High basketball IQ. Tayshaun Prince. Zero talent.
I was thinking the exact same thing. Keep going.
High IQ. Let's get Kevin Garnett, one of the most intense players and teaches you how to play the game right. Let's get these guys in and teach these kids. Just have them be on-court coaches.
That's exactly what I thought that was. I thought they got Andre Miller so that he could teach up guys like Ricky Rubio, Zach LaVine, and Tyus Jones. I thought they got Kevin Garnett and kept them around so that they could, you know, help him teach Karl Anthony Towns. And I think they brought in Tayshaun Prince so he could help out with Wiggins. Like, I really think that was the...
Just teach these guys, you know...
You know what's ironic? That's what Sam Mitchell was for Kevin Garnett when he got there. He was the mentor.
And that's why Sam Mitchell, like, he was a horrible coach. Yeah, but as far as player development goes, not too shabby. You know, there's some people you don't want in the top position, but who you'll gladly take as an assistant coach.
Talent-wise, Minnesota isn't that far off, even though they were 16-66 and they wound up with the number one overall pick.
Talent-wise, they're a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
They are another mismatched team.
Well, Zach LaVine, some people don't agree with me here. I think Zach LaVine's got something. Like, and it's not just the dunking.
What does he do?
What's that?
What can he do now?
I think he's good at attacking the rim. And I'm not just talking about dunking. I'm talking about laying it in. I think he's got certain advantages wingspan-wise over other point guards.
Can't shoot. Doesn't play defense too well.
True.
But the thing is, I saw this. I saw him as Gerald Green.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, what can he do? You know, he has crazy ups and he has talent. But if you're not going to teach him how to do anything, you just become that guy who can run around the court and doesn't do anything, and then he'll be in Europe for a few years.
I think the guy who's kind of a weird fit there is Kevin Martin. Even though Martin's like their most dependable offensive player, it just doesn't seem like he belongs there.
That's what I was gonna get into. That part one is, they have 17 guaranteed contracts right now, so all these people they brought in, like,
it's really the same team.
You know, Kevin Martin is part of a different team, and you should just get rid of him,
mm-hmm.
and see what, you know. He should have a fairly good value, but there's really no room for him on this team, and. You know, what is Towns? Is he going to be the four?
He's a five who can play the four. I think he's a guy that will be positioned at center because of the small ball in the NBA, but he can play four because his mobility and his footwork is so good, especially on defense.
Here's the second part of that question. What are you going to do with Gorgy Dang.
I think Jang is the odd man out.
Nikola Pekovic in his 50 games before his foot injury.
I think Jang is going to be eventually used as trade bait.
Nemanja Bjelica.
Bjelica turned heads in EuroLeague. I think he was the EuroLeague MVP. So we'll see. We'll see what he can do in the NBA.
You got a little bit of a log jam there now.
Mm-hmm. And also Damian Rudish, who's more of a pop a shot guy. You know, he's not a.
I have him falling 16th on my.
Well, Pekovic is trying to rebound from a really horrible health wise. So we'll see.
Oh yeah, he's had two horrible years, but like. I don't think they're going to give up on Adrian Payne yet.
No, I mean, I think they like him a little bit.
Like I said, with 17 people on the roster, you could like Rudis, but
I think Lorenzo Brown is gone. Yeah.
And nobody's taking Anthony Bennett and Shabazz Muhammad. Who is long forgotten.
Bennett has a team option next year, so if they don't like him, then he's a goner.
Oh, he's already, they're not.
What's the ceiling for Andrew Wiggins?
The ceiling for Wiggins?
After 1 year watching him. Give me a decent comparison, best case scenario.
McGrady, not a leader, but will be a superstar.
McGrady's a good one, but I think he's more of a defensively minded version of McGrady.
Personality. Like he cannot will yourself to a championship. He is not going to be the leader of that team.
Ricky,
who will? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Rubio, I'm still not sure of. Like people really like him, you know. He's got he's got a little bit of the flash in the passing game. Defensively, his numbers. He's got the good analytics defensively. But when I watch him, sometimes you could throw every statistical number at me and say, "You see, this is what that means." But then, Adam, sometimes have you felt this way? You watch a game, and no matter what the analytics tell you, you watch and you think, "Man, the analytics are fucking wrong." You know, and
it's
I feel that way about
the old Charles Barkley eye test.
Yeah, and I feel that way about Rubio. I watch him like that is not a good defensive player. He cheats on charges all the time, trying to draw them, and you know he always swipes. That's why he gets the steals that he gets. And I just maybe it's because he's more of the physical defender in a league where you can't be physical anymore, and that's kind of what his niche is. But I just don't think he's much of a defensive he's not a defensive stalwart at point guard, and he can't shoot. It's obvious he's never going to learn how to shoot, and I don't know if just being a good passer is enough. Like, I don't know if he was worth the extension that he got. At about 14, I think it was about 13 or 14 million.
Yeah, he got a good deal, but it was just one of those, everybody sort of just let's keep who we have.
What do you see with Rubio? Like, do you see a good player?
I see somebody who was doing good until he got that horrible injury last year.
Well,
Now
you're talking about 2012 when Kobe bumped him and he tore the knee, or you mean the bad ankle?
Bad ankle this past
year. Okay.
This past year, he started off really hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then just sort of, never. His year was lost because of that injury.
Here's a weird stat about Minnesota last year. They were 27th in rebounding. They were 9th in offensive rebounding. Now, that will be helped by Towns. So maybe their three-point shooting was dead last. That was what I was kind of alluding to earlier. They were the worst three-point shooting team in the league. They refused to shoot threes. Flip Saunders wouldn't even let him shoot threes. And I don't blame him much because if your best players are Rubio and Wiggins – and Kevin Martin was out for a lot of the season with an injury, then you can't shoot threes anyway. So why try? Offensively, not very good. Defensively, oh my God, they were so bad. So where does the improvement have to come first?
Well, the improvement has to come with their medical department, because they were more so than any other team bitten by the injury bug.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody, they didn't have a complete... those five guys didn't play together hardly ever because somebody was always out.
Mm-hmm.
What do they need to work on this year? It's just you have a glut of players again, which is the problem with the basement, is you just keep collecting all these picks. And unfortunately, you know, you said the David Kahn era is over, but they're still making dumb trades, giving, you know, Atlanta
trading Budinger for Rudish, you mean?
Yeah, Budinger for Rudish. Well, that was just we need to get rid of a body, and he's not going to fit in. And, you know, trading for Adrian Payne for protected first, giving Thaddeus Young and a first for Kevin Garnett.
Mm-hmm.
You can't develop your team if you're not going to have picks.
Will they have the worst team record in the league again?
Probably. Them or Philly.
Okay, now let's get to, as we wrap up, we'll go to, first of all, let's try to do the rankings based on this one. So we're talking about the bottom teams, number 30, 29, 28, 27, 26. Let's go to the bottom. Adam Murray, who is your worst team?
Let's just pass Philly and just say the 29 teams and then there's Philly.
Okay, yeah, Philadelphia I would say is the worst team. Who is 29th?
Minnesota.
Really? I would probably say New York. I'd say New York is still the second worst team.
No, Minnesota just has young players, and they're not going to even try to win because each game is going to be a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to be like, oh, man, if we try this, no, we're going to stick to our game plan. Today's lesson will only be, you know, pick and pop plays.
28.
Lakers? No, Orlando.
I agree with 28. What do you say, 27?
27th, Lakers.
Oh, so you said 28th is...
I changed it to Orlando the last minute.
You said Orlando? Okay.
As much as I want to like them, all I can go is off previous history.
So you like the Knicks as, like, the top of this pack?
The Knicks are the top of this pack. It's not even a thing. If you have Carmelo, who's still in his prime, and you have solid backup players around him, you can eat these lower...
Yeah, but Derek, I don't know if Derek Fisher knows what he's doing. I mean, he probably doesn't,
but it's not going to take a lot to beat upon Orlando for four games. You play Philly for four games.
What I was thinking, you know, Philly 30, obviously. I think the Knicks are 29th. I think the Lakers are 28th. I think 27th is Minnesota, and I think 26th is Orlando.
As much as I, you know, argue against them, Robin Lopez and Aflalo are better than anybody else on any of those four rosters.
I'll take Magic's smaller big three over that. I'll take that.
Potentially, yes. But as far as what I, you know, I like, you know, we both like Vucevic. He's still a soft player. Robin Lopez is more of a complete.
Among this group, give me one bold prediction in the regular season or throughout the season for any of these teams. You can give me one if you'd like.
Bold prediction, Byron Scott doesn't make the season.
That Scott gets fired before the season's over.
Yeah, they just say, look, your old school ways are not going to work. He's going to have a clash with young Russell there. And Swaggy P and Lou Williams, who are always like, nah, man, we're playing a game of horse. You know, I'm shooting from the L.
My bold prediction, I think regardless of how it happens, be it injury or a trade, I think by the end of the season, Zach LaVine is going to be the starting point guard for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
What about our boy, Tyus Jones?
I think LaVine's got more upside than Jones because of the athleticism.
Okay.
I like Tyus, Mr. Apple Valley, as we always lovingly call him on the show. But I don't think he's a starting point guard in the NBA. I think he's a good backup.
All right.
I broke your heart, huh?
No, I just hope my prediction is bold enough to do it.
Well, I mean, what's bold here? I mean, the boldest prediction is that one of these teams is going to be good. And we know
apparently my bold prediction is I apparently think the Knicks could be decent.
That is kind of bold, to be honest.
Okay, then I'll go. The Knicks have no prediction.
That wraps up this grouping here, no chance in hell, where we talk about, you know, number 30 through number 26. And then we're going to be moving on to the next one for the next episode as we continue our kind of a long-winded version of our NBA previews as we get into some of this. So, are you Are you looking forward to as we go from the shitty teams to the really bad teams?
Well, we're having fun talking about the shitty teams, as you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Once we get to the good teams, yeah, they're good. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, the good teams are kind of boring. So, yeah, they're okay.
They're just efficient, and then the good teams don't change anything. Well, this has been, you know, there's been some shakeups, but for the most part, you know, the team doesn't make any changes. Well, how are you going to stretch any top time out of it?
I think on the next stretch, we're going to see some teams that took a couple of nice swings, and then some of them, they got dismantled, but not by design. So I think we have a couple of fun ones for the next one. But that is the next one, because this one is fun, so...